Welcome to Cloudlandia.
Mr. Sullivan.
Mr. Jackson. It would be a tragedy if these calls were not recorded.
It really would. That would be the truth. Yeah. But isn't it nice that they're automatically recorded and we don't have to remember to do it?
Yeah.
Just feels organic. So welcome back, Cloudlandia.
Yeah.
It's been a couple of weeks here.
Yeah. You know, here's a thought that I was just pondering, that it seems to me that as Cloudlandia expands, people's real world experience, not real world, but mainland experience, they're both mm-hmm. real worlds. Mm. Mainland experience seems to be more challenging and seems to be, in some cases, more vexing and more traumatic. Okay.
Do you have some exhibits?
That's my thought. That's my cheerful thought for the day.
Do you have some exhibits for your argument?
Well, there's such an emphasis now on meltdown, people having nervous breakdowns.
Yes.
Which I don't remember at all growing up, you know, 50s, yes. 60s. I don't remember any talk like this, but now it's constant every day, you know, people having.
And it's everywhere, right? Like now,
it seems. Yeah. I mean, everywhere that I know. I mean, much of the world in humanity that I don't know, but everywhere I know, it's not so much that the people that I'm talking to are experiencing, it's not that it's a narrative, you know, that, you know, these are the most trying times that humans have ever had. And I said, well, first of all, I don't even know how you would know that. You know, how would you know?
How would you know? Yes.
I mean, if you haven't been there, your knowledge of 150 years ago is probably pretty slim.
How about the Dark Ages? That had to be pretty, yeah.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think it's a comparison, and I think somebody's got a point to make. When they say the Dark Ages, well, they probably weren't dark for the people who were in them.
Right, you know? Exactly. That's so funny. Well, the Roman Empire seemed to have a pretty good time, didn't they?
Yeah, well, you know, life is life, you know.
Yes.
You know, and it's a discussion I have with people who are talking about the future. And I said, I'm going to guarantee you one thing about the future is that when you get there, it's going to feel normal.
Mm-hmm. And we're going to,
and I think
it's funny.
I think that'll be disappointing to a lot of people because they think that future is going to transform them. And I said, well, not any more than the past did.
I've ever had a friend who always would say, these are the good old times.
Yeah.
Like that's the reality is wherever right now, it's just the distance of it, right? Like if you're thinking, you know, in the past, that was just a reflection of a moment in the present at one point, you know?
Yeah, it's well, funny. The reason was we were at Genius Network this week, mm-hmm. and the subject of Apple's new ProVision goggles came up. Okay, I don't know if you've experimented yet. I haven't,
I have not. But
they said this is going to change everything, and I said, "Wait a minute, a year and a half AI was going to change everything." Okay. And you know, I got up this morning and. You know, my life doesn't feel that much different than when the day before AI was introduced, ChatGPT was. And I said, and so I began thinking about that you're using basically a Cloudlandia phenomenon to say that phenomenon is going to change everything. And I said, well, you know, I mean, who's talking? I mean, my question is, who's talking? Maybe it's going to change you, but you know, for most people, half the world won't even know about it 10 years from now.
Yeah, like that's, you know, it's so funny. It reminds me of the, you know, it's like asking a fish, how do you like the water?
Yeah.
The water. They don't have any recollection of what you mean, the water.
Yeah.
Gen Z is now, you know, all the Gen Zs have no idea about a world without internet and social media and everything on demand. I mean, they have no idea about there being three channels on TV that broadcast everything to everyone at the same time. And not when you watch what they put out. I mean, that's pretty, it's pretty amazing, right?
And it was in black and white.
In black and white on a their dream. Yeah.
You had to jiggle with the antenna to make sure that you were receiving that day. And you didn't think anything strange about it. That's just, you know, that's just what you had to do.
Eating your TV dinner and its tinfoil plate and your Jiffy Pop popcorn.
I remember those as being quite tasty.
Yeah. Isn't that funny, though, Dan? I mean, I do think about that a lot. I extended the southerly boundary of my footprint on the planet a couple of weekends ago. I was down in Miami in Brickell at Giovanni Marsico's Archangel event. He invited me down. And yeah, so it was just a, you know, another world, you know, expand everything happening, you know, people bustling around all in there. Certainly a lot of traffic every, you know, on the mainland, things are largely status quo, you know, and getting more congested probably.
Yeah. You got to pick your times. You got to be more intelligent about picking when you decide to travel these.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But I got a feeling it's been that way, you know, since we could transport ourselves. But I think the question I have is, what is it about the present that's not okay with you? You know, and I did this diagram, which I'm going to develop into a thinking exercise.
I love that.
Yeah. And it's, and I think you've seen it. I think you've seen it. And what I have is a sheet of paper, and the diagram goes from lower left to upper right. Okay. And down at the bottom, there's a little circle, and up at the upper left, upper right is a bigger circle. And underneath the little circle is here, and under, above the bigger circle in the upper right-hand corner is there. And then I draw a line that's got an arrowhead, you know, it's a straight arrowhead, and it's called striving. And I said, this is a portrait of your entire life. I'm going to tell you, as entrepreneurs, I'm just going to tell you your entire life is you're here and you're striving to get there. Striving. I said, how many of you remember this is the way it was at 10 years old, 30 years old? Some of you 50 years old. I can remember 70 years old. Mm-hmm. Okay. And I just want to say, so let's say you start at 10 and now you're 60 years old. And one thing is absolutely true. You have a lifetime 50-year habit. Every day, lifetime habit reinforced of being here, but striving to get there. I said, so with that very pure habit in place, what do you think the chances are at 60 you're going to be there?
That's, it's profound, right? But it fits in with the gap in the game too, in a way.
Yeah. So actually 10 years ago, the reason I'm bringing this up is 10 years ago, I decided that I'm there. And now the job is not to get anywhere. The job is just to expand the quality and quantity of the there that I'm at. Okay. And I had this exercise, and you did, which is called Your Best Decade Ever. And I decided when I look back that I've achieved more between 70 and a couple of months, 80, so 70 to 80, I've achieved more in the last 10 years than I did in the previous 70 years.
And what do you, did you set out with that as your intention? Or did you, is that the byproduct?
Instead of my intention, I just made a decision. I remember 10 years ago when I was 70, you know, and there was, if you remember, there was a big party. And
I mean, how can I forget? You just recently forgave me for lying to you.
Yeah, there was a dirty lying culprit involved in that. And I love him in spite of that. I love him.
There we go. There you
Okay. And anyway, but I was reflecting that I'm there, you know, I'm there. Yeah. And there's no, and it shows up in two ways, Dean. And it is that I've noticed, and this just occurred to me one day because people say, yeah, would you like to meet so-and-so? And I said, not really.
Right.
Not really. And I don't have any particular reason to, like somebody said, who's the person that if you could, you would love most to have dinner with? And I said,
Jackson.
I said, certainly someone I know.
Right, exactly.
Certainly someone I know. No, you haven't met them yet. And, you know, and I said, no, I can't think of anyone, you know. And they said, yeah, but, you know, yeah, I mean, is there anyone in the, you know, that's going to be different in the future? And I said, yeah, but that just, that's built into the formula. Mm-hmm. I said, you know, every year we bring, you know, close to 1,000 new entrepreneurs into the program. And I know out of 1,000, there's going to be, you know, a handful of them that I really get to know. And they're, you know, they're bright, they're exciting, they're ambitious, they're creative, they're doing all sorts of interesting things. So just as a matter of course, I'm going to meet them. And they said, no, but, you know, I mean, would you like to meet Taylor Swift? And I said, no. What would we talk about? And somebody was going to introduce me. Actually, I was described to this person. That person said, I'd really like to meet him. And it was a famous politician who said mm-hmm. that they'd like to meet this guy. And so they said, would you call him? Because he'd really like to talk to you. And I said, but I don't have anything to say to him. I
said, right.
I don't have any reason. He may think of a reason for meeting me, but I don't have any reason for meeting him, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I've got
mm-hmm.
so many really bright people that I know that mm-hmm. I'm having great conversations with. I don't, you know, I don't really want to. It would be a lot of effort, you know, a lot of effort.
Yeah.
It would be a guess and a bet where mm-hmm. I'm working with guarantees. I'm working with guarantees, you know. So anyway, but the other aspect of this, where's the place in the world you haven't been yet? I said, can't think of any, you know, that you'd like to really go to. I said, I can't think of any.
Right.
You know, maybe when I'm in London, I'll head in a northwest direction rather than the, you know, the other directions I've already gone in to see what's 5 or 6 streets away. You know, I know uh-huh. in London, you're always running into something new, no matter how long you're there, you're doing it. So I've got those two things. And I think it's a function of the decision I made 10 years ago, you know, that there's nobody I particularly want to meet. And there's no one I particular place that I want to go. And I think the reason is because I've decided that I'm there.
Do you know what's so funny, Dan, is that is very similar thinking to what I did in 1999 with the I know I'm being successful when.
Yeah.
Of thinking about that it's being is the state of being here. You can only
be in the present. It's not doing, it's being.
Right.
It's being.
Yeah.
And it's really interesting. I've been reading this several volume series by this Italian philosopher, truly a philosopher, Augusto Del Noce, died around 1990, and it's on atheism. It seems that his last 25 years of his life, he was just zeroing on this one subject of atheism, which is kind of a new thing on the planet. You know, it goes back, the beginning of it is maybe 400 years ago. And it probably coincides when we have the tools and we started to have the financing to do things scientifically, you know, and people notice that as they develop scientific concepts and then technology enabled them to measure in a way that they hadn't been able to measure, they discovered brand new things. And they decided, since we have this growing ability and it seems like it'll grow forever, why do we need God?
Yes.
So why do we need heaven when we can create our own heaven here? Mm-hmm. And that was a guess and a bet. And it seems to me that they haven't really been successful. But anyway, I've read a couple of them twice, and I'm on a new one right now. And he just introduced this vast universe of different thinkers who contribute some aspect to what we would call atheism today, you know, which mm-hmm. is essentially the denial of that, one, there is a God, and number two, that a God is needed, you know, that mm-hmm. we're perfectly okay ourselves. Since I've been writing that, I've just been increasingly aware of the subject I started the conversation with on my part today, which mm-hmm. was, it seems to me, as we develop these incredible technological abilities, and there's no question that AI, I don't know anything about the new one, so mm-hmm. I don't have any opinion on it, but that it's not making people happy.
Right. Like perfect, you know, there's great words that I heard Peter Diamandis talking about one time, of perfect knowledge, that you can see that we're moving to a place where we're wearing, let's call them sunglasses now, you know, like goggles, not the big thing that Apple just put out. But that's, if we liken that to the first cell phones that were those big brick cell phones, if we, you know, link that down to, if we take the progress of those, you know, VR and AR, you know, goggles to be more like, you know, super thin sunglasses that just look like glasses, and we couple that with the advancement in VR or in, you know, AI in our pocket or attached to our wrist or whatever, however that goes, that we will reach a point where we know, we would have access to knowing everything about everything that's known by visual or auditory cues, right? Like being able to walk through a city and have, through facial recognition, everything about a particular person, or to walk through a forest and see every, you know, animal, butterfly, you know, all of those things. There's not going to be any mystery of things, I think, you know, like if you just fast forward these things, the speed of
friction.
You're
saying that this is what you're getting out of Peter Diamandis saying this?
I'm saying, I'm looking what Peter Diamandis said. He was the one that I first heard say those words, perfect knowledge, and I'm translating it into where we're headed now, where we see that it's not too far of a stretch to see the combination of ChatGPT AI and the, you know, AR sunglasses, augmented or virtual reality sunglasses or glasses, to be able to view the world through those lenses and have reflected up on the screen or in front of us all the data about somebody or about anything that it sees. You know, it's really almost the way, you know, the need for the more friction in the involved ways of gathering knowledge would have been. Like if you had to, let's say you saw this amazing flower or something out on a walk, you'd have to remember it or draw or make notes of it. Then you'd have to go to the encyclopedia, you know, of botany, and you'd have to go through, or you'd even go to the library and look in the Dewey Decimal card catalog system for flowers and look for a book that you could scan through to find that maybe somebody has documented what this particular flower is. The friction of gathering knowledge was so, mm-hmm. you know, so involved in friction. And the more that you knew, the more that you could store in your brain, that was sort of a measure of intelligence, right? Or a measure of the fact that you knew stuff. That's an advantage for things. But now, if we get to a point where everybody has perfect knowledge, you have to look at it and see, okay, that's the, you know, whatever that is, or that person is this, or this product is this, or that.
Yeah, I'll give you someone who has a yearly experience of, I'm very smart, you know him, mm-hmm. Stephen Poulter, the IVF mm-hmm. doctor. And he says, you know, the thrill of being in this field, because basically most medical breakthroughs happen in the pregnancy and like the first year of life. So most, you know, if you watch where the money goes in medical science, it has to do with pregnancy, conception, pregnancy, birth, and then probably the first year of life. And the other one is the last 12 months of life. Okay. And that's experimenting to see if we can keep someone alive, you know, beyond normal. And he says, from my perspective as a doctor and a scientist. He said, every year, it seems to me that we know 10 times more about pregnancy, because he's an IVF doctor, in vitro fertilization. Mm-hmm. And he's a great, you know, and the statistics gathered by the U.S. government indicate that's true. He's in the top, you know, five. And he says, but the problem is that when you know 10 times more, you're beset with the 10 times greater universe of what you don't know, that the 10 times new knowledge has opened.
Yes. Yes.
So, okay. So, and I was just pondering this as people were saying, well, Dan, have you tried out the new provision yet? I haven't. I said,
no,
I haven't answered two questions. I don't have the answer to two questions. And they said, what's the question? So I said, does this experience of provision, does it increase or decrease?
I bet it.
Just where would you put your
mainline dopamine?
Yeah.
Just go ahead and hook it right up. You don't even have to move your hands anymore. Yeah.
That's the first question. The second question I have, if I don't do it, am I missing anything?
What's very interesting too is that, to me, the visual that I'm getting also is that even ChatGPT and all of those things are decidedly backward looking, meaning it's only trained on what's known knowledge.
Yeah. All creativity is backward looking.
Okay.
I mean, if it's worth anything, you know, Apple is really great at this, because Apple's never first to do anything. You know, as they're the most highly valued, you know, on a consistent basis, they're most highly valued corporation in the world. But they've never actually done anything new. Just do what already exists a lot better.
Wow. Yeah. So you wonder what is.
So the provision is, there isn't anything new what I can see about the provision, because the goggles already exist. It's, you know, it's an upgrade on, you know, what Palmer Luckey probably created with Oculus. And then, you know, emails already, they say you can do emails with your eyes. And, you know, you can do search with your eyes. You can, you know, everything else. But I said, these things already exist. They're just pulling together and integrating something that wasn't able to be done at the same time, you know. And, you know, plus it's really pricey. I mean, it's, you know, I mean,
it's reassuringly expensive, Dan, is what I like to say. I mean, sure, everybody's tried this. They've tried other goggles.
How much is your program? Reassuringly expensive.
That's right.
I'll tell you, the sales team is going to have that line tomorrow. It's what, and they say, well, why does it reassure me? And I said, you know who's not going to be in the room.
That's exactly right.
What they're doing is already exists with the U.S. Air Force and the all the pilots. Everything those pilots do is done with their eyes. They have this screen that's not a screen. I mean, there's no screen, but they see a screen. They see and they operate with five other planes. So almost every mission where they sent one of the new hyperjets, the pilot feels himself as a group of six. He's a member of a group of six, and he can tell exactly what the other five are doing. You know, he doesn't have to turn his head. He doesn't, because he can see it on the screen. Plus, he can see 500 miles in all directions. This is all done with the eyes. These pilots have to train themselves to do everything with their eyes. Well, that already exists, you know. They're bringing it down to a civilian thing. But, you know, the whole question I have, are the stakes big enough that I would teach myself a new skill?
Right. Or does it fit? Well, that's it, right? I've been test driving, by the way, Dan, and it gets good reaction. Is there any way for me to get this without doing anything? Is a good place to start.
Well, check your limit on your card.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and first of all, it's an antisocial activity because you're putting goggles on. So nobody's going to be around you when you have your goggles. But Mike Koenig was there the other day, and Mike said, you know, he says, your mind has no grasp of you until you've done it. And I says, that's fair. I said, that's totally fair. I understand that. The question is there enough of a compelling offer that I would even want to have the experience? And I think that would be measured in the mainland, not in Cloudlandia. I think whether anything is worth it, it really has a function. Does it register? Is it measurable progress in the mainland? Right?
I think you're right.
Well, I'll give you an idea. Your studio, your great studio, which we'll have a copy of in September or October of this year. The team is in there now. We have eight studios. We have eight studios, and they're going to be, you know, up to date technologically. But the thing that compelled me to, first of all, for us to follow your lead and really investigate what your studio is doing. One of our team members, who's key to the execution here, came down to Orlando, you know, and went there, and they said, it's fantastic, and they're very helpful, and they'll help us any way we want. But the thing was of just how much you get done in the mainland was what prompted us to look into it.
Yeah. I mean, that was kind of that before you brought it up, even thinking. I remember the day sitting in the cafe writing in my journal about, okay, I want to start doing more video stuff, and asking myself the equivalent of that, you know, thinking, because I'm definitely trained in thinking who, not how, but I caught myself really going down a how path of thinking, okay, what do I need? You know, at least two of these. I need two cameras. I need lighting. I need, what am I going to have for the background? I was already visualizing how I would rearrange one of the rooms in my office to be the, you know, always ready studio kind of thing. And then it dawned on me about that it's already there. That's the equivalent of, is there any way I can get this without doing anything? And we literally went, you know, straight there and set up. Yep, signed a contract and recorded the very next morning. I mean, it's just so funny that the time pressure that allowed. And I realized I was, you know, I was at the end of the 12 weeks, I signed a 12-week contract that I had already, you know, I had 12 weeks worth of content in, you know, created and already documented. And we hadn't even reached the point of what one of those cameras would cost. Like three cameras that are $6,000. Yeah. You know, the microphones are $1,000 each. That sound for the studio environment, I mean, the whole thing, the software, all of it. It's a crazy thing when you really start thinking about, is there a way to do this without doing anything? And that's part, it's so parallel. You know, I've been talking about, imagine if you apply your self, SELF, sphere, is things around you. Is there somebody else, a service or someone that you know that could just do this without you having to do anything?
Yeah. The thing is that I can think of some team members that I'll encourage, and we'll finance it. Fabs now finance it. Who would be interested in looking at ProVision and seeing what application it would have to the normal course of business of speeding things up, making things easier, you know, and everything. And so funny, I was having a conversation with someone, and he was texting, you know, and about, we were with him for about 2 hours, and he probably texted, you know, 15 times, 2 hours, and received text. And, you know, in 2 hours, excuse me, I just have to take 5 minutes to do this. And so I said, what would you say on the average day that you're involved in texting? This is the average day. And I said, and I suspect if you do it on 5 days a week, you actually do it on 7 days a week.
Yes, exactly.
I don't think you take a weekend off from this habit. So anyway, and he says, well, you know, a light day is maybe 100 texts, and, you know, a really filled up day is 400 texts. And I said, you know, that your lower number, 100, that's more than I've done in my lifetime.
More texts than you've done, yeah.
Yeah, 100. I haven't done 100 texts. Yeah. I haven't done 100 texts in my lifetime. I mean,
yeah.
And that would be 95% to Babs, you know. And, yeah. You know, and mostly I use emojis. I've become very Egyptian. I can do hieroglyphics with emojis, and I can get a message.
Okay, yeah.
And I like it, you know, thumbs up times three, you know, times smiley guy with sunglasses, you know, I mean,
yes,
you can do all sorts of creative work with emojis. But except that we're apart. The only reason I'm doing it is because we're apart. You know, we're not in the same location. Otherwise, we'd just chat. But the thing is that this person, when I look at what he gets done, I get 10 times more done than he does in a day, certainly in a week or a month, you know, a week, a month or a quarter, I get 10 times more done. And I don't do any of it. You know, I don't do any of that stuff.
Yeah, I bet that's part of
the, but to me, it's not profitable productivity. It's the feeling, it's dopamine busyness.
Yes, I agree 100%. That's exactly that's what I've been catching myself, you know, is really taking a look at that and realizing how much of this is, you know, really counterproductive in a lot of ways. I was saying I had a breakthrough blueprint at Celebration last week, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and we were talking about, you know, I was bringing up the idea that you and I had been talking about the 25-year frames, and you know, we're talking about your 70 to 80 best decade ever, and how, you know, 3 years I'm going to be 60, and then it'll be the next 25-year framework, I'll be 85, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And we're so looking back, 28 years ago, you and I've discussed, like, that takes you all the way back to, you know, 1996 or 95, whatever that is. And realizing that everything that we look at right now that is so important to our lives wasn't even in existence then. You know, like, I still remember in 1997 when internet was just starting to become mainstream, and it was definitely a place out there that you went to go to. You know, you would go to the internet from your primary world on the mainland, and it was a distraction. It was something, it was starting to dip into maybe, you know, TV time or something that you would do otherwise. And then I remember, you know, gradually it became more and more, and 2007 I view as the tipping point when we started with the iPhone bringing the internet with us and the app world becoming vital functions for going through our days. And now we're at a point where it's so woven into our existence that it's like water, and we don't even remember. You know, I mean, all the talk now is what would happen if the grid went down. Indeed, Dan, what would happen if the internet went down? Not the power, not electricity, but let's say the network goes down. So many things would be, you know, so many things would be messed up. We don't know how to survive without it. Yeah. I was joking about that article. I remember in the New York Times or GQ, I think it was, magazine, had a journalist that they sent, you know, to try and survive in New York City for a week where their only means of contact with the outside world was the internet. See if he could make it. And he searched, you know, in this bulletin board, and he found this restaurant, this Chinese restaurant that had a menu, and you could order delivery on the internet, you know, and he survived with those things. But now it's so exactly the opposite that it would be challenging to survive in New York City a week without the internet. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just so, that's how things have switched.
Yeah.
Well, you're the closest thing I know of to being, you know, Amish
And one is, my life is not that much different. I mean, I've certainly made use of the technology. I mean, there's no question. And I enjoy the, you know, I enjoy the internet, and I mostly enjoy it for YouTube. I would say YouTube is the thing I enjoy most, because I can get really in-depth one-hour explanations of a particular topic.
Yes. You know?
And Peter Zion is very good at his 8-minute, 10-minute, 15-minute. Very, very good at it. Yeah. And I really enjoy that. And then I'll watch all the action scenes out of Denzel Washington's new Sicily film, you know. And I mean, you don't have to watch a whole Denzel Washington movie to get the essence. You know, it's about 20 minutes of really hardcore violence. You know?
Yeah, right.
and he wishes the other person hadn't gotten him into this situation. He says, you know, I was just going about my life here. You know, it would have been better if you left me alone. But here we are, you know.
Here we are.
You know, and you got about 10 seconds to decide whether you're going to live or not, you know. So I'm just looking at my watch right now, and 3 seconds, 2 seconds. And, you know, and I enjoy that. It's like a little, you know, palate, you know, refreshener. And then I'll go back and I'll look at some question that occurs to me. I wonder, you know, what happened in this historical situation? And sure enough, you can find one or two or three, you know, movies or, you know, videos or something on the internet, you know, and you can do that. And it's very conducive for my ADD brain to have that activity. And people say, well, how much you read a lot? No, I told people, you know, I haven't watched television at all. In July, it'll be 6 years that I haven't watched nothing. All the football, I haven't watched any of it. Nothing. I haven't watched any of it. But what I've discovered is that no football game has more than 10 minutes of action. And so I just watch the highlights. And then I don't want to see the highlights for the other teams. I just want to see the highlights for my team. And that's about 6 minutes. And I said, geez, all those games I spent watching hour after hour on television, I could have gotten 10 or 15 of them in and the time it would take to do it, you know. But I sort of zeroed. You know, you kind of zero in on what's the dopamine part of the exercise, you know, the activity. So, but I resist the notion that this is going to change my life. I just resist the idea, well, this changes everything. And I said, well, you know, speak for yourself, you know, doesn't change anything for me.
Right.
And we're both Tauruses. We're both Tauruses.
Yes.
And we will sacrifice no pleasure for something new.
Right. Oh, man, that's so funny.
Any existing pleasure, we will not put that on the table as a bet.
Yeah, we like our current pleasures. That's right.
Oh, yeah. So, you know, and the thing is, the world is made up of all sorts. And so you've got to have the people who are, you know, the people who are just crazy nuts about the future, you know, and they, you know. And there's people who say, well, you know, as far as human nature goes, I haven't seen anything particularly new in 79 years.
Right.
I'm not saying not interesting. I just haven't seen a lot of new stuff happening with the fundamental change in people.
Right. Yeah. So how are you looking at your next best decade ever? Your months away.
Days away. The big thing is that we've discovered a great capability in the last 2 years, and that is that our thinking tools, coach tools, seem to translate easily into patents. Okay, so we started in April with a big batch. We put in dozens of applications, and they're starting to come in, and we've got 12 now since April. We've got 12 patents. And these are, you know, these have asset value. They're like every patent. It's like you created a house, you know, and it's got a marketplace value the moment you get the asset. You know, you get the, you know, notification from the patent bureau that this is now a patent. And there seems to be something good about our thinking tools, or, you know, strategy circle, free focus and buffer days. There seems to be something about our thinking tools that resonate with what they consider to be a patent. you know, something that can be granted a patent. So this is very exciting because all we're doing is taking stuff that's been created over the last 35 years and giving it an asset value beyond just getting paid for it in workshops, you know. So it's it's growing. And we're not doing that. It's a whole team of other people. We just write a check. And, you know, a year later, we get back an asset that is, at the minimum, 10 times more, you know, greater than our investment. I mean, that's you know, 10 to 1 in a year is pretty good return on investment. So I'm very excited about that because we just have vast, Dean, you can't believe how much stuff we've got in the storeroom, you know, just the sheer number of ideas that we have. And all of them are popping up in my mind. We're going back through documents I created 25 years ago. And I said, geez, that was a great idea. But it had no present use, so it didn't have a value. But here you can take everything and increase the value of. So I would say the next 10 years, the amount of asset value we will create in intellectual property, you know, patents, will equal the total amount of revenues we've created since 1989.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's what I'm excited about.
Wow.
And that's where the program is going. That's where the program is going. I mean, Dean, if you went through all your notes, all the notebooks that you've created and everything else, I bet there's a gold. I bet there's a gold mine there that is.
No, I understand it intellectually. I understand that there's lots of that. I get that. I can't, what I have a hard time wrapping my mind around is to what end, you know, like I wonder what the,
if you were ever in, you know, first of all, that tells you that it's property is the fact that you can borrow against it. Not that we need it.
Right. Okay.
But I will tell you, we had to scamper a little bit during COVID and we had to scamper a little bit during the meltdown in 2008-2009. Where we lost the bottom of our program. I mean, the revenues for the people who were at the lowest level, we just instantly lost it, you know, for a year and a half or 2 years. Right. And fortunately, we went into our own reserves, our own personal reserves, and we could, you know, we could finance the company. But it was nervous. I used up weeks of her time. Yeah. You know, I don't want to. Here, you just call a number and you say, I'd like to, you know, the way it's all set up now with the, you know, the appraisal companies and then the loan companies, it's all set up. And we'll get to know all those people. So the assessed value is up to date every day. And so it puts you in a position where you're cash confident. And I like the game that the strategic coach represents, and I just want it to go on and on, and I don't want to be wasting time with nervous crises.
Right, exactly. Yes. It's a good way of putting it, nervous crises. That's,
Yeah. I mean, there's creative crises, but the nervous ones I could do without.
Right. Oh, that's so funny.
Is there any way I can solve this problem by doing nothing?
Without, that's right.
But I'm doing anything.
Well, that's as close as you could get, I guess, when you think about it. Like
that seems to me perfect knowledge.
Yes, exactly. All this number.
Yeah.
Brady, right.
I don't get the value of knowing everything. You know, I don't get the value of instantaneously knowing. What would, and besides, we already created that technology.
Who was that? Who was the famous, you know, the old story of the gentleman that said he doesn't need to know those things. He has a button on his desk. And whenever I need to know anything, I'll push that button and seven men will show up in here and one of them will know the answer to what I'm looking for.
Henry Ford.
Yeah, it was Henry Ford. Like that's Henry right. Ford. Yeah. Yes, yeah. I could summon someone.
But we've already created the technology for perfect knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to say, Dan, what is the technology?
Well, what is it, Dan?
It's called God.
Okay.
And people have access to it, but they said, no, we're going to get off. We're going to get away, you know, and I'm not joking here because when you read these books on, you realize that it's a desire not to be dependent at all upon the entity that created you. And I said, well, yeah, I'm okay with it.
Right.
And they say, well, it's like you're dependent upon God. And I said, hey, well, first of all, I'm very comfortable to know that he exists, or she, whatever, the in this transgender age. Anyway, but I have a feeling, you know, I've had a feeling since I was a kid that I'm connected to something that's transformative, and it's way above my ability to know things. And, you know, I'm okay with that. I don't lose any energy over that. But I think there's this one of the, in reading these many books on atheism, I automatically translate, when I read a lot that is a very deep subject and a person has spent their whole life doing it, I always think, is there some aspect of this that I can just capture and write a quarterly book on? And it came to me after I've been reading Del Noce, the Italian philosopher, for about a year. And what I came to is a title. I always go for the title of small
book. Yeah, of course. That'll.
Yeah. And the title is Atheism is Very Hard Work.
Oh, boy. Atheism is very hard work.
Yeah. These guys, people who are atheists just have to, I mean, it's 24/7. I tell you, there's no harder work on the planet than being an atheist.
Oh, my goodness.
Because they're on the lookout for anybody who even suggests that there's a God. And, you know, it, they get angry and they, you know, they have to get into an argument. I said, geez, that's a lot of work. That's a lot of work.
Yes. It's so funny, Dan, and observant and true. It's like, it's those things. It's funny. It's like those isms, right? Like veganism.
Yeah.
You know, yeah.
I mean, you
where
can't sleep.
Feel compelled, evangelical.
I mean, you can't relax. You can't sleep. I mean, isms. I mean, yeah. Be you know, except quick startism.
Right. Yes. You watch Dan Tucker Carlson's interview with Putin.
Yeah, I think Tucker Carlson did himself a lot of good.
Uh huh. I think so. Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, he wasn't any different with Putin. You know, I mean, this is the guy who gets you thrown off the top of the building. You know, he didn't seem any more, you know,
yeah,
less relaxed than he is with anyone. You know, he just.
Right.
As a matter of fact, there's a couple of situations where he just kind of broke out laughing. And he said,
yes,
I can't believe you. I believe you just said that.
Right. But it was very interesting to hear Putin's history lessons, you know, going all the way back.
Well, you know, you got to look at it from their point of view. Yeah, you got to look at it from their point of view. They are the easiest country historically to invade. I mean, they have about 13 different gateways where enemies can send their troops. It's a flat country, you know. I mean, the U.S. has 3,000-mile moat on the east, and they have a 5,000-mile moat on the west. And they've got pot-smoking Canadians on the north. You know, that's, they're no threat.
Oh, my goodness.
And then you have the Gulf of Mexico. You know, you have the Gulf of Mexico and the Caribbean on the south, and then where they're connected to Mexico, it's 200 miles of desert and mountains. I mean, you can die before you can get across that thing. So the U.S., but Russia is just the opposite. Not only can people invade, they've been invaded 50 times since his 800 number, you know, you know, whatever the year is. I mean,
right.
I mean, they have real honest to God reason for being paranoid.
Yeah, it's so funny. I thought it was funny when he was saying how, you know, he asked about joining NATO. I thought to myself, because isn't that the whole purpose of NATO, to protect against Soviet invasion or expansion?
Yeah.
Well, let's get in on that. Why don't we join that too?
Yeah, but, you know, you got to look at it from his, you know, I mean, you don't have to agree with his point of view, but you at least have to know what his point of view is.
Yeah.
You know, and if I was his point of view, I mean, he was born a nobody. And he, you know, through diligence and hard work, he got to be a colonel in the KGB, you know.
Yes.
And I have to tell you, if you were in the Soviet Union before it collapsed, there was no more better job and status in the world than being, you know, a up-and-coming officer in the KGB. They got to travel. They had their own stores. They could have somebody arrested and killed you know, pretty easily and everything else. I said, you know, you can see it for, his career took a real drop when the wall fell, you know, so.
Well, Dan, we said it all.
How'd we do it? How'd we do?
I mean, we said it all, really.
Wasn't perfect knowledge, though.
There's always more. That's exactly right. Yeah.
The one thing about knowledge is being made up on a daily basis. So I don't know how the word perfect fits in there.
Right.
I mean, we just created new, over the last hour, we just created some new knowledge.
That's exactly right. That's what's so, it's visually like it's really interesting. That's my vision of that. It's future blind, you know. ChatGPT, it's all only feeds on what's already been created. Yeah.
You know,
but there's still got to be some
technology had feeling. If technology had feelings, which I don't think it does, I think AI should be more nervous about humanity than humanity should be nervous about.
Right.
Geez,
yes.
What are they going to come up with today? You know, I mean,
right,
I feel like we've got it all organized every night. And, you know, at the morning,
stuff.
In the morning, we get back and the rock is down at the bottom of the hill again. We got to push it up.
That's so funny. That's so funny.
Yeah, I think it's technology that's trying to keep up with humanity, not the other way around.
Well, I'm excited, Dan. It's almost a couple of weeks.
Yeah, we've got a calendar date. Yeah, I'll tell you, we're going down the Thursday before. We're arriving in the evening of the Thursday before.
Okay.
So we've got Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday. I think we got 4 days. And we're at the Four Seasons.
Yes, that's great. When are you leaving?
Wednesday, the day after, you know, the day after the,
Okay.
Yeah.
Hey, so we will have,
but I'm,
we're on track.
We're on for next week. We're on for
next week. Okay, perfect.
Yeah.
Well,
great,
have a great week,
Dan.
I will talk to you next week. Thanks.
Okay, bye.
Bye.